Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Lifting Heavy Things, Healing Trauma One Rep at a Time, by Laura Kudari, foreword by Leisha Sky, narrated by Siri Scott. Publisher's note: this audiobook may refer to visual elements included in the print and e-book editions of the book. Foreword. Trauma is an unspeakably terrible experience that overwhelms and incapacitates you. It also refers to the resulting underlying and overt feeling of being unsafe that remains in the body and that never completely relaxes. The deep-seated emotional and physiological residue of trauma changes the way you perceive and experience yourself and the world around you. The typical hair-trigger reactions of shutting down or feeling the urge to flee or fight at the slightest suggestion of danger become the norm and, in turn, diminish your ability to relate effectively to your world and life. Traditionally, in our Western culture, we have turned to talk therapists to help us make sense of these overwhelming experiences and resolve them. With a good, caring therapist, talking can get you to a place of awareness and acceptance of the events of your life. You may come to understand the reasons you react to triggering situations in certain ways, but understanding is often not enough to help change reactive tendencies or instill the confidence to find new ways of being in the world. In other words, people living with trauma may find that talk therapy alone cannot bring them the relief they are seeking. For a fuller form of healing from trauma, we need to contend with the physiological states that correspond to our thoughts and emotions. We need to befriend our bodies and learn what is going on internally. This is what is often referred to as embodied awareness. Embodied awareness is not a fixed state that can be achieved once and for all. It is a fluid and constantly shifting state that requires intention and practice to consistently re-establish as we move through day-to-day life. Paradoxically, embodied awareness can be extremely challenging for people living with trauma to practice, because the feelings of constant threat that trauma instills in the body can make tuning in to the body's signals feel intolerably uncomfortable. Therapists who work with embodied awareness-based modalities strive to help their clients return to a sense of safety within their bodies so that lasting healing can take place. I came to my practices of embodied awareness through personal exploration as a singer-songwriter, a yoga practitioner, a peer counselor, through meditation, through my 30 years of attuned awareness as a massage therapist, and through actor training in theater. Since 2012, I have been guiding embodied awareness experiences in the context of trauma workshops with Bessel van der Kolk, author of the esteemed book on trauma, The Body Keeps the Score. I met Laura Kudari a few years ago at one such workshop I was co-leading at Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health in Massachusetts. She was a bright light in a room full of caring people from all walks of life, interested in learning about the role the body plays in the healing of trauma. After the workshop, we connected on social media. Laura's posts filled me with awe and admiration. Here was this gentle and insightful weightlifting woman respectfully encouraging all of us to become stronger inside and accept ourselves in the bodies we have. I always thought that Laura's inspiring words would make a wonderful book, and this book is much more than I imagined or expected. In Lifting Heavy Things, Laura shares her techniques for re-inhabiting the body through mindful movement and carefully guides us on a journey of self-exploration and courage, providing a step-by-step process of learning how to listen to and trust the self. Her writing voice is that of a warm, confident friend helping you to feel at home in the gym, a place that might not seem so friendly at first to some of us, and anywhere else you might choose to exercise. She generously shares her own journey to strength, as well as the techniques she uses with her clients. Then, always gently and respectfully, she invites you to embark upon your own healing journey through writing prompts, physical exercises, sensory observations, and internal reflections. This book is a steady, worthy companion for anyone interested in undertaking embodied healing work. May it help you find your way to self-compassion, self-acceptance, a sense of strength, and an embodied awareness practice that can serve you for a lifetime. Leisha Sky, co-founder of the Trauma Research Foundation. My Trauma Story That I Never Tell. Author's Note on Privacy. When I talk about my work, I invariably mention that my interest in trauma-informed movement grew out of my own experience healing from PTSD following an acute trauma in 2014. People then often ask me, "Can I ask what happened?" I reply, "No, I'm sorry." My refusal is rarely challenged, and I feel my body relax with relief. People ask this for different reasons, some because they care, others because they cannot help themselves. We all love a good story, and it's often thought that a good story needs shocking events to keep an audience in its thrall. I disagree. I think a good story is character-driven and can be interesting without anything terribly exciting happening. I hope you think so too, because I've written a book full of stories like this for you. People also share their trauma stories for different reasons, whether asked or not, but it has been my experience that people often don't realize they don't have to share. They might believe that, in order to ask for help or to be of help, they need to explain the details of what they went through. Again, I disagree, in principle and from experience. I believe we can receive and give help without retelling our trauma story, or any other part of our story for that matter. Although trauma researchers and practitioners agree that when healing, we need people with whom to process our trauma story and confide in, both can happen with the same person. We don't have to share everything with everyone. We need not prove ourselves to be worthy of help. We do not owe anyone an explanation, and if someone continually asks for details and ignores your boundaries, it's fairly certain they are not a safe person. As such, throughout this book, I have used brackets when I feel the need to bring up the context of my own trauma story. Open bracket, space, closed bracket. Throughout the book, we will explore the healing quality of space, as represented typographically by these brackets, and in the form of compassionate pauses, an allowance to go slow or even stop. Note, they will be verbally represented as my trauma. To that end, I want to address the way I incorporate my client stories in this book. I do so sparingly and have changed their details and blended their stories. I never share a personal trauma narrative. Besides, I rarely even know it. Lastly, I want to note that I began writing this book before the COVID-19 pandemic. At the time, I was thinking deeply about how to convey that we all experience a variety of potential traumas. We lose someone we love. We are involved in accidents or get sick. We are victims of violence or social injustice. But as I neared finishing my first draft, I found myself writing about trauma in the midst of a society-wide trauma, the intensity of which many of us had never experienced before. Trauma, at a base level, leaves us feeling disempowered, lonely, and fearful. COVID-19 has certainly done this for many folks by instilling fears of loss, the loss of jobs and economic stability, of a known way of life, and of life itself. Everyone is impacted in some way and to some degree. Although this book was not written specifically for life during a pandemic, that context has shaped how I talk in the text about trauma on a macro level and about accessibility to physical training modalities. In my own journey and professional studies, I have learned that trauma is the unprocessed physiological response to an overwhelming event or events. Trauma is not the narrative of what happened, but a result of the fact that whatever happened was too much or too quick for your nervous system to process in the moment. In turn, the trauma prevents you from moving through and completing your natural threat response cycle, leaving you effectively stuck somewhere in that response, even after the threat is gone. Your nervous system may still try to protect you from a threat that is no longer there. This leads to changes in your emotional and physical state that are likely dissonant with the present reality. As a trauma practitioner who works with the body, I have come to understand deep in my own viscera that we can help ourselves and others without focusing on the details of the narrative, but on the feelings, sensations, behavior, images, and meaning left behind. Whether you are working with an acute trauma, like assault or an accident, complex childhood trauma, generational trauma, or a larger societal trauma, it is my intention to help you learn how to tolerate the stress and discomfort it brings, no matter the narrative. We can hold space for others and ask to be held ourselves without sharing our trauma stories. This book is, in part, an ode to feeling safe in our bodies and in the world. It is also a rallying cry for us to respect one another's humanity, agency, dignity, and privacy. In my work, I can help people without knowing their story. Their body tells me all I need to know to guide them on their path to healing. You deserve that space. We all do. Introduction. When I work with clients individually, I understand and appreciate that they are making the choice to include me on their path. The same goes for you. Experiencing your own agency is an important piece of trauma work, and I want to acknowledge that you are doing so in choosing to pick up this book. Thank you for including me as a guide on your healing journey. What I also do when I get started working with a client is introduce myself. As such, before we get started, I want to give you the opportunity to learn a bit about me as a practitioner, as well as what to expect from this book. My embodiment journey. I am not your typical fitness professional. I became a trainer and intern at a barbell club in my late 30s. I decided to start my new career path because I felt called to become the trainer I had sought myself, but could not find, following my trauma. I wanted a personal trainer who understood how trauma changes the way people experience their bodies and the world around them. It was my experience, which I later found was supported by research, that exercise had the power to help me heal, but could also exacerbate trauma symptoms. Immediately following my trauma, and before I started doing research, I longed to find a trainer or coach who understood this too, and reflected back to me that they also understood what it was like to live with trauma, how hard it was to move well as I struggled to tolerate daily life in my body. As alone as I felt at times, I found it hard to believe that I was the only person out there like me. I wanted to strength train, but trauma was making it difficult for me to feel safe while doing so. I found that without safety, healing was impossible. And I was right. As soon as I began practicing as a trauma-informed personal trainer, clients around the globe reached out, wanting to work using this approach. Over 4 years, I have done some great work with individuals in person, but I want to be able to share the body-based modalities for healing trauma with more folks than I could humanly work with one-on-one. So I wrote this book. Another thing that makes me different from many fitness professionals is that I am not a jock and never was. Growing up, I hated gym class and was confused by my friends who chose to play sports. Not immediately revealing myself to be coordinated or athletic, my gym teachers and classmates wrote me off as such. I thought I didn't really mind because I was happiest when I was sitting and reading, writing, drawing, or talking to friends, which matched the rest of the rebel persona I had adopted anyhow. But some part of me internalized the idea that I was unathletic and had no business in the gym. I interpreted that to mean my body was less deserving of love than those of my more athletic-appearing peers. Over time, this poor self-esteem around my body, in both its appearance and ability, made me increasingly disinterested in physical activity. Flash forward 20 years, and I have become a fitness professional. My accomplishments even highlighted by my college alumni association. The college, where as a student I had deigned to participate in mandatory PE for what I thought was the last time in my life, interviewed me for 2 publications and included a photo of me seated comfortably in workout clothes on a weight bench, a rack of dumbbells in soft focus in the background. Those photos revealed just how much had changed since I graduated. My hair still hangs in curls around my face, but they are no longer dyed purple. My body, still soft and average appearing, is considerably stronger than it was at 22. The most important change is not visible. I understand that my body is mine, that I am entitled to have boundaries around it and to take up space with it. Next to my photo is a pull quote from the interview. I came into my voice, and not only did I learn what I wanted to say, I felt okay saying it. I was referring to my experience of gaining confidence at a women's college as an insecure teen, but these words also apply to my postgraduate experience, through strength training, as an adult woman, and as a trauma survivor. I went from resenting physical activity to doing it begrudgingly, then habitually, and eventually joyfully over the course of 14 years. Strength training helps me continue to step further into my power each day, including in writing this book. The seeds of my own movement practice were planted back in 1999 when my back went out for the first time. It was the summer between my junior and senior years of college, and I was getting out of a chair at my student job when my back seized up all of a sudden. I could barely walk and spent the rest of the summer recuperating so I could be well enough to sit without excruciating pain in long seminars and lectures the next fall. The orthopedist I saw suggested that strength training could alleviate the pain. While I was relieved that he wasn't suggesting surgery, exercise felt punitive because going to the gym was all tied up in a messy knot with my experiences in physical education class in school, my poor self-esteem, and an internalized societal rejection of the shape and size of my body. I did the prescribed physical therapy and then promptly put strength training and my body on the back burner. 3 days a week at a local commercial gym, I saw my physical therapist, a reticent young woman with a shaved head, dressed in the unofficial physical therapist uniform of a polo and khakis. On arrival, I would get on the elliptical for 5 minutes or so, and then we would head into the treatment room, where she'd spend 30 minutes doing soft tissue work on my back and adjacent muscles, relaxing their spasms enough so I could move. She often did this by finding a tender point with her thumb, knuckle, or elbow, and staying with it until it released. Then she would massage the surrounding area and move on to the next tender spot, and the next. Then we'd do a few core strengthening exercises before going back to the elliptical for 5 minutes. It would be 10 minutes the following week, and so on, until I could tolerate 30 minutes. After 6 weeks of physical therapy, I returned to campus with a bit of a limp, a crush on my PT, and the intention of sticking with using the elliptical machine 2 or 3 times a week. The limp lasted for years, the crush for days, and my commitment to the gym, not at all. I rarely used the elliptical in college. I would only go to the fitness center if nothing else worked for a flare-up of pain, and to keep up the habit just until the pain stopped. 7 long years later, I showed up at New York Sports Club to begin strength training. In the time since that bout of physical therapy, I lived my life by moving around carefully. I was only 27, but I was frequently in pain and always afraid of my back going out again. I had discovered yoga as one modality that helped reduce my pain levels and cultivated a regular practice, but I still couldn't be pain-free for more than 5 days. I finally accepted that I wasn't adequately managing my back pain and that my original doctor, not to mention my mom, who was urging me to meet her trainer, was probably right. The day I showed up to my mom's gym, despite resisting it with every fiber of my being, turned out to be the start of a sustainable and healing movement practice. My first trainer, Big Ed Williams, who would become a mentor and lifelong friend, greeted me with a warm and genuine smile. You'll get to know him better in this book. Over the course of 8 years, Ed would not only help me train to get out of pain, he would create space for me to find pride in my body, as well as have fun in the gym. By the last year of working together, I had also found the curiosity and courage necessary to try the competitive sport of weightlifting, also known as Olympic weightlifting or Olympic lifting, presumably to differentiate it with the act of lifting weights to strength train. You may be familiar with the event from the Summer Olympics, in which athletes use 3 lifts to get barbells weighing hundreds of pounds off the ground and up over their heads. It took a couple more years before my movement practice evolved into its current form, embodied, healing, and joyful. Following my trauma, I developed PTSD, and then sustained a second back injury that left me unable to do much of anything, especially Olympic weightlifting. In order to feel safe training, I decided to use movement to intentionally cultivate a relationship with my body. I listened to it more carefully and began to honor it, not just when it needed to move, but also when it needed to rest. I had to, or else I ran the risk of getting hurt again and again, which would mean I couldn't train at all. I changed the way I approached strength training in order to heal my back first, then to protect my body. I had no idea that this mental process would also play a pivotal role in helping me heal my emotional and spiritual self, as well as my relationships with others. Discovering embodied practice. I deepened my practice while also achieving long-term training goals through self-directed education and practical exploration. I sought out classes and studied with trauma teachers and practitioners who worked with the physiology of trauma. It was during my initial studies that I decided to become a certified personal trainer, so I cracked those books too. My shelves now bend under the weight of the books I have read on the physiology of trauma, somatic experiencing, mindfulness practices, polyvagal theory and its application to healing trauma, trauma-sensitive yoga, and human movement. These are the various modalities I use myself and with clients, some of which we'll get into in this book. In books and through experience, I've learned that our bodies have a lot of good information to share if we pay attention. This happens when we're in a state commonly referred to as embodied, which is thrown around a lot in wellness circles without a very clear definition. We're all in bodies, right? So how can we not be embodied? Unfortunately, that's not quite everything. When you are embodied, you are mindful of your body, its shape, weight, density, and have the capacity to be aware of feelings and sensations that arise from it as and when they do, not after or before. It may sound simple to be embodied, but for most people it's not, especially those living with trauma. We'll go into this in part two. I first figured out how to be embodied in the gym and then in the world. This process helped me discover what I was capable of and what my boundaries, needs, joys, and fears are. I stumbled a lot along the way. I spent a lot of money and time on orthopedists and physical therapists, body workers and energy workers, hypnotherapists and talk therapists, mindfulness and yoga classes, personal trainers and weightlifting coaches, wellness retreats and workshops, feng shui experts, and of course, books on all of these subjects. Of the many therapeutic modalities I tried, some worked for me and others didn't. By teaching you in this book how to listen to what your whole body tells you, I hope to help you bypass the services, modalities, and practitioners out there that don't align with what you want and need from your own long-term journey with healing through movement. From an embodied place, you will be better equipped to decide what is actually safe and healing for you, as opposed to doing things because others tell you they're safe and healing. Although my story is one that takes place primarily in the weight room, I know that yours may take place elsewhere. A Pilates studio, your own living room, or the great outdoors, to name a few places where embodiment may await you. The tools I share in this book will work, no matter which movement sparks your curiosity and no matter where you practice. About me. I think it's important for you as my audience to learn more about me generally, along with the parts of my daily experience that have shaped my work, because these formed the lens I bring to my work and my writing. My work grew out of all of my own lived experiences, and my healing and growing was shaped by many factors that go beyond my trauma. My experience has roots in areas where I have had tremendous privilege, such as wealth and perceived whiteness and heterosexuality, which gave me access to private education from high school through graduate school, and have opened doors to networks of people who could help me. My privilege has also granted me access to excellent medical and mental health care, as well as making it possible for me to access many different wellness modalities. My experience is also that of a Jewish American of Syrian descent who is not always seen as white. While I have benefited from white supremacy, I have also experienced racism. I am queer and often assumed to be heterosexual because I married a cisgender man. I have experienced heterosexism. And like my sexuality, they may not be visible, but I am also living with disabilities. I have experienced ableism. I am also about a size 12 or 14. I have an average appearing physique. I mention this because although people come in all shapes and sizes, a lot of folks feel movement is off limits to them, not because of ability, but simply because they are not lean or small. I live in a body that is larger and softer than most fitness professionals.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?